check in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Friday afternoon, Memorial Day weekend. Here we go, not too much longer, and it's going to be summer-like weather, of course. A little bit later in the program, I'm excited for this, the Wintrust Community Leaders segment. We're going to talk to Michael Brown. He's the president of Compact Industries, and they do things like they make powdered cappuccino and things like that, that other name brands then contract out from them, and you buy. Maybe you buy a Nestle product that is actually made by Compact Industries. We will talk to Michael Brown about that a little bit later in the program, but we're going to start with the editor of Blue Sky Innovation from the Chicago Tribune in the studio, Andrea Haynes. Welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thanks, Steve. Good to be here.
Okay, so we've talked about Plated, and I used HelloFresh, and all of these meal cook at home, but they're meal delivery systems, right? And there was big news this week with the Chicago one, Home Chef, that we've been following for years.
Yeah, Home Chef has been around for a few years, and big news for them this week. Kroger is going to pay at least $200 million, maybe more, over some years to acquire this meal kit company that's based right here across the street.
I was going to say, they're right over our shoulder, or mine anyway, at the Wrigley Building.
Yeah, the Wrigley Building.
And they're delivering 3 million meals a month, they say. I think Albertsons, the owner of Jewel, bought into one of these. Was it Plated? I don't recall now. But it seems like these meal delivery systems all of a sudden are being swallowed up by grocery stores. And does that mean we're not going to get them delivered anymore, that we're going to buy them at the grocery store?
Yeah, probably both, right? Like one aspect is, I think, you know, they'll be sold in stores, like some others that we've talked about in the past. I think another interesting thing about this deal was they noted that they get a lot of reviews from their consumers, something like 100,000 a month. So that's like intelligence, you know, and how people are using these kind of things that may be helpful to Kroger and other things as well.
Helpful in what? In figuring out what they're going to put on for sale? Or
yeah,
what
everybody's trying to figure out how to crack this, right? I know we've talked about Blue Apron, which has kind of had its ups and downs, but everyone's trying to crack this because, you know, it's convenience. It's what seems to be what people want.
Home Chef now will be sold in Mariano's stores around here, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, among all this consolidation, Mariano's is owned by Kroger. You've got Roundy's in there too, right? So it's like all the companies that own the other companies. But yeah, so Kroger is the buyer, but locally we have Mariano's.
So I wonder if this is a home delivery story or a grocery store story, because I bet that a third of the food that we buy in my house from the grocery stores are now prepackaged meals or prepared meals, whether it's soup from their soup bar or, you know, Mariano's has a $10 meal place, $7 meal. We're not buying as much of the raw goods to cook ourselves as we are. They're becoming almost takeout restaurants in some ways.
Yeah, I think in large part they are. And then the meal kits give you a little bit of that, but right. Also make you feel like you're putting your touch on it. You're cooking it fresh, so to speak.
Why the heck would I do that if I could buy it at a deli cart across the store for about the same price?
Yeah, I don't know. I get why you do that, but I also get why it appeals to people to feel like they're the ones cooking it.
I do too. I understand that, but it's that you. Well, we'll see how it goes. I mean, I wish them well, because the other thing is you have to then buy. You know, you're sort of limited by quantity if you're buying a kit for two or three or things like that.
Yeah, these are around $10 per serving, so that's the price point on the convenience.
Coming soon to a Kroger. There are still Krogers around here, I think, aren't there? There used to be. Anyway.
I don't know if there are any too near where we are right now. But
or at least a Mariano's.
Yeah, and it's, you know, a great exit for a Chicago startup.
Yes, there's the business angle of it. Really, $200 million, not too shabby.
Yeah, maybe up to $700 million, depending on their performance. So it's a pretty big...
Speaking of big deals, you know, we still like to think we're in the running for Amazon's second headquarters. I hope we are. Tribune ran a story this week. Now, the Tribune has been one of the news agencies, I think, preeminently behind getting at Mayor Emanuel's private emails under the argument that he's using private email for government business. And so you got a story out of it this week in his conversation with Jay Carney, former White House press spokesman who worked with Emanuel in the Clinton administration, who now is with Amazon.
Exactly. This gives you a little slice of life. So yes, as you point out, the Tribune, and in this case also the Better Government Association, have been trying to get these emails. And they do show some, you know, what you would have to consider sort of city business, although there's a little bit of a funny kicker when you can tell that Emanuel knows these people.
Who's your daddy?
Who's your daddy? It's one of the lines from the email, right, which is embarrassing and weird in a lot of ways, but... You know, God forbid, right, anyone looks at any of our emails. So we'll cut them a break there. But yeah, so this was Rahm communicating with Jay Carney. And just sort of, you know, they were saying that they were impressed with Chicago's bid. This was some months ago. And Rahm was taking the opportunity to point out some good things about Chicago, right, including some neighborhoods that had gotten positive attention.
It's really just a slice of life story, right?
It is.
I mean, I feel kind of weird about it because we're eavesdropping on their private. It is government business, so it should be public record. But it's also two guys who know each other and being completely noncommittal with each other.
Yeah, there's. I feel like it's interesting for that reason. If you kind of care about how things work and how movers and shakers get things done, I feel like it's a little bit of a window into that world that's kind of, you know, both informative and a little entertaining as well.
So we'll see. So we've got to be coming up on some sort of announcement, right, with the Amazon headquarters?
I hope so, because, you know, how long can we take all this, right?
Exactly. Because we have to start focusing on the Apple second headquarters soon.
Yeah. More headquarter battles, right?
This will be the summer, I don't know, of pop-up restaurants. I remember the Saved by the Bell one, right? That did really well. They kept extending it. And you had a piece in Blue Sky, or no, it's Red Eye about that, right? About pop-ups. Are we going to see more this summer?
Yeah, Red Eye took a look at this. There definitely are more coming. And there have been some super popular ones. There was a Stranger Things one that got in a little bit of trouble because they didn't actually collaborate with the official brand holders there. But there have been others that have done really well and more coming. As you point out, there was a Saved by the Bell one that was really big. And this story looks a little bit closer. Just like, why are these so popular? You know, people like novelty, obviously. The people in the bars and restaurants have experimented with some things. Like, they're like, well, 90s night is doing really well. Let's do something about Saved by the Bell. So it's kind of creating these like sort of special moments and some, you know, diversity of experience inside their places. And it makes the night very Instagram worthy, which is never to be discounted in this day and age.
Always amazing to me that people will cater their business to whether or not it works on Instagram.
Yep, it's important.
So what pop-up restaurant would you go to? You're too young probably for Arnold's.
Gosh, mine would all be pretty embarrassing. Oh, Arnold, yeah. Now that you mention it, I remember it. Yeah. Yes, yes.
Where would you go?
Gosh, that's such a tough one. You know, I watch Columbo, so I don't know if there's anybody in there that would like come up with any great pop-ups.
All right, well, that's our homework for the week. We have to find a pop-up.
Find me a pop-up detective. A
Columbo restaurant for next week. Andrea, have a great long weekend. Enjoy your time.
You too. Thanks, Steve.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Bertrand, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
Tom Gimbel is in the studio here. He's the CEO of LaSalle Network and comes by on most Fridays to talk about what's going on and when it comes to business leadership and all that. Tom, welcome back.
Good to see you, Steve.
Okay, real quick. So you went on a solo trip. I'm just intrigued by this.
Well, you're the travel guy.
Yeah. So you went on a solo trip to Spain.
Yep.
Was that last year?
It was last summer.
And so I asked you today, I said, what are you doing this weekend?
Yeah. And I've got a free travel pass anywhere in the world, so I'm going to go to London for 30 hours.
So you're just going to pop over to London for 30 hours.
I figure, you know what, the flight isn't relatively that bad.
No.
And, you know, a couple more hours and go into California. So give it a shot. And
I think it's
You know what, my kids aren't going to be around. So if they're not going to be around, I'm not going to sit around and twiddle my thumbs and work in the garden.
There's only so much golf you can watch.
Exactly.
It's
going to
be pretty hot out. No, good for you. Do you know what you're going to do?
No. No, I think that's part of the fun. Right. I think if I knew what I was going to do, I probably wouldn't do it.
Really? Yeah. Well, you know, that's funny you say that because you could really sort of freak yourself out. Like, I've got to get this done.
Yeah. No, I was there when I was a kid, and I'll just probably walk around and
It's exciting.
Yeah,
well,
people
have
watch.
A great time.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming by.
Yep.
No, wait, that's not it.
That's it? There's more?
So I was talking earlier today about an article we were looking at where Roger Federer, French Open starts this weekend, I think, and Federer was interviewed, and he said, you know, I wouldn't be the player I am if it weren't for Rafael Nadal.
Totally.
Nadal's actually beat up on him. He's beaten him.
And it made him come back, right? I mean, there was this 5 or 6 year stretch where Nadal had the better of him.
I think Nadal does better on clay, and that's what hurt him. But so tell me about how this applies to business. How competition makes you better.
Oh, I think if you look at any company, I think we're seeing it right now between Google, Amazon, and Facebook, right? These huge companies that are doing it. And on a local level, I mean, even in the radio business, right? When there's stations that are doing it and programming chiefs and people grow up together. And it's the same thing in business. If you're a salesperson, you have internal competition and external competition. And if you're good at your job, you should really know both.
So I want to talk external. Yep. Are there companies that, if they are not being pushed by others, sort of flounder?
I don't think that's necessarily the case. I mean, there's certain industries, especially with the boom of the advent of technology over the past 15 years, that kind of create their own little blue ocean, is the cliche, right? And so they can go out there and they just go because they're just building it from nothing.
Right.
But I do think in my business, and lawyers, I think, are very much like that, and accounting, for, right? I mean, think about the big four, right? Ernst & Young and KPMG. They all know they're going after the Fortune 1000 companies, right? There's that competition to want to be better in a market, to how to grow, and to know who the people are that you're fighting. It's fun to know who you're up against.
Is LaSalle Network, are you up against people?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we have 9 different practice lines, right? So we've got, if you say that there's 3 or 4 key competitors in each business practice, right? We look at it that way, and we don't wish ill will on anybody. Let them succeed, but there's enough business to go around, so when we're going up, we want to win.
So do you watch what they're doing, and does that dictate how?
You know, it's harder to find out for privately held companies what people are doing,
right?
But you do talk, if you have good relationships with your clients or prospects, you find out who they're using.
All right, let's go to internal competition.
Usually, unless you get to the C-suite, usually there's peers who are doing similar jobs to you. And if you're not looking around and seeing what they're doing, you know, even if you're an accountant, there's more than one accountant, right? Who's getting the plum assignments?
Right.
Who's getting their work done faster? That's the competition that drives.
I think you need to define competition, though, because sometimes it can have a pejorative sense. You know, competition as in backstabbing, as in trying to bring the other person down. So there's got to be a balance between healthy competition and...
Absolutely. I mean, I would hope... Well, I guess hope springs eternal, but not really. Yeah, you shouldn't wish ill will. The way we define internal competition in my company is we say if the race is to 100, you should want to get to 100 first and have the next guy be at 99.
I like that. Yeah, right? So everyone succeeds.
Yeah, and in a lot of companies, negative competition is I get to 100 and you're at 50. I want to, an SEC football game, 44-0.
Right.
That's not my style. No.
All right, Tom Gimbel, the president of LaSalle Network. Follow him at lasallenetwork.com. Have a great trip.
Thank you very much.
Come back with slides because I want to know. I'm really interested in what it is that you end up seeing and what you end up doing.
30 hours. I may just sleep there, but I hope I can motivate to get out and walk around.
Have a safe trip. Great to see you.
Talk to you later, man.
Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
It is 12:37 as we sit in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue for another couple of weeks here as summer gets underway in Chicago, Memorial Day weekend just around the corner. Also around the corner, we'll talk to Rod Rose. He's the executive director of the Cook County Land Bank. Do you know about the land bank? They have got hundreds, if not thousands, I think about 3,200 parcels of land that they are selling cheap in order to foster redevelopment in parts of the city and parts of Cook County. So he'll be along a little bit later. But right now, I'm happy to say hello to Michael Brown, the president of Compact Industries. And this is he's one of our Wintrust community leaders. Michael, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Hey, Steve. Thanks for having me.
I got to tell you, I have had just a gas reading about your company last night and today and learning about it because it's one of these things that is perfectly logical, that all makes sense, but I just hadn't considered it. And out here in St. Charles, you are producing 90 million pounds of powdered food for bigger brand names, right?
Exactly.
Tell me about Compact Industries.
Well, we're located in St. Charles, Illinois. That's where our warehouse and manufacturing plant is. And the company was incorporated in 1963. We do manufacturing of food products, as you said, primarily for the food service industry, dry blending and packaging of various food products, instant coffee and tea mixes, hot chocolate, cocoa powders, cold drink mixes such as lemonade. We also do some gelatins and puddings. Our top customers would typically be coffee companies,
right?
But not necessarily have to be a coffee company.
You were early on in the cappuccino business, the powdered cappuccino business.
Yeah, it's an instant cappuccino. You would
thank
typically
you
see it at a convenience store.
You correct me anytime you want.
Yeah, but yeah, we were involved with a locally based coffee company here in Chicago, Superior Coffee. I'm sure a lot of your listeners remember that.
Sure.
And we got involved with them early on in the 90s, and it's kind of skyrocketed for us. It really took our company to the next level, and we were able to expand and get out to St. Charles and build on that.
But you're making the stuff that I'm buying in the grocery store under another name, right?
I mean, we don't have any brand names at all. Right. Actually, we produce everything under our customers' different labels.
So you can tell us some things that you make that we buy?
Yeah, well, cappuccino, as I said, is a very big, if you go in your typical gas station or convenience store, we make a lot of that powder that is dispensed out of vending machines and cappuccino machines. And hot chocolate is a big product for us. But not only that, specialty chocolates. We do a lot of special.
Michael, I'm thinking of like Kraft products or things like that, you know, brand names that we know the names of that you produce.
We could do some stuff for Kraft and other large coffee companies in the country for sure.
All right. How many people employed out there?
We have typically around 150 to 200. We're a little bit of a seasonal business in that we're a little busier in the fourth quarter as, you know, the colder weather comes on.
Oh, sure. I guess I hadn't thought about that.
We also are a woman-owned business. My mom's CEO, Ronnie Brown, and my sister is executive VP, Tracy Brown.
Okay. So what's it like to work for your mom?
There's a lot of good things about it, mostly good things about it. I would say she keeps me in check. She keeps me good.
Yeah. Your grandfather was involved early on.
Yeah. My mother's father was involved early on. He got involved in the business in 1975 and ran it until he passed in the late 90s. And basically, he did a great job. He built the company up and got us to a place where we're able to handle it as a third generation. I'm sure you know the statistics between about third generation.
Right, it's tough.
Yeah, but we're doing a good job at it.
Okay, so you are a contract producer.
Contract manufacturer.
So a big brand, you know, rather than make it on its own, they contract it out. That makes a lot of sense. You know, we're farming out businesses, farm out personnel. People do all of that. So that's what you do.
Make products that companies don't want to make themselves is really
because
what it comes down to.
And so is that how big of a field is that?
It's pretty big. I don't know the numbers off the top of my head, but I'm sure it's in the billions for sure in terms of outsourcing. A lot of these companies just want to do the sales and marketing piece. They don't want to do the manufacturing piece.
So it's cheaper for them to hire you to make it than it would be for them to make it themselves.
Yeah, it's a very competitive marketplace, too. Our industry is very competitive.
I had a friend 30 years ago or 25 years ago, and he was a food scientist. And it was one of those things I'd never thought about before, but his job was to create flavors with flavorings or, you know, to create powdered flavors and things like that. Is that the sort of stuff that you guys do?
We have probably in our warehouse 300 flavors, different flavors for different customers. Vanilla is a very big flavor for our products. It's a, you know, one of the most probably popular flavors out there.
Right.
So, we have a tremendous amount of flavors. We have our own R&D staff. And we have about 6 people in our R&D staff, and we do a good job trying to match products and do R&D work for our customers.
How many people work for you overall?
150.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, I asked you that too, and you said it was seasonal. This is your Wintrust community leader. Tell me a little bit about the value of working with the bank or partners that way and how Wintrust helps.
You know, Wintrust has been a great partner. I love the fact that they're a Chicago-based bank. That's one thing. And we were with another Chicago-based bank before them. But they put in such a great job with us. We do some seminars. They have these breakfast seminars probably on a monthly basis.
Yeah.
Cybersecurity, manufacturer training and recruitment. Another one was pretty timely, was preventing sexual harassment in the workplace.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you go in there and in the morning, they bring in some experts and they do a really nice job.
No kidding. So the bank will help you train workers or help you lead workers.
They'll lead you in the right direction. They'll bring in experts to kind of, you know, because manufacturing jobs, it's tough. It's a tough go these days trying to find people. A labor shortage, you know, the unemployment rate at 3.9% right now. It's really hard to get. There's a labor shortage out there, and it's real.
You have a hard time finding workers?
We do. Yeah. And we advertise, and we get some, but it's difficult. I mean, with the labor rates the way they are right now.
So what is the difficulty? That they're finding other better jobs elsewhere, or that the pool isn't available for you, or what is it that makes it difficult?
It's difficult to find the skilled people we need, maybe to run machinery and that type of thing. I think it's a function of the economy really exploding right now. Mm-hmm. Birth rates are, you know, there's an article that I read a couple weeks ago, birth rates in the U.S. are declining. So there's a genuine labor shortage.
It's an interesting thing because we talk about losing manufacturing jobs, and yet it's the manufacturing plants that are going wanting for workers.
Exactly.
Is it because the pay is less than it used to be relatively? Or
The pay scales, I mean, I think our pay scales are going up 5 to 10% a year just to attract people in. I mean, you hear about it all the time with certain fast food companies and how they're having to increase their wages. I mean, it's the same for our business.
I'm sorry for you to hear that, but I'm happy for everyone else. I do talk about that a lot here that, you know, they say, well, when things get bigger, busier, wages will go up. And sometimes in the government statistics, we don't see that actually happening.
They're definitely going up.
You're seeing that.
We can see it year over year, and it's tough for us to automate. It's very expensive for us to automate some of our processes. So we just have to do the best we can. And, you know, our customers don't want price increases. So
you got to
get the efficiencies where you can. So it's pretty difficult.
Michael Brown, the president of Compact Industries. Thanks for coming by.
Steve, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
You bet. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
This is the Wintrust Business Minute.
Got a minute? Good, because I've got the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing the news, providing input, and breaking down the stories that matter to the world of business. Quick update from earlier in the week about the new Southside neighborhood, the 78. Details have been released that developers want to place at least 10,000 new homes in the neighborhood. This is big stuff, because yet another year in a row, Chicago has seen a drop in population, so hopefully these will be homes that are attractive to out-of-state residents looking to move to the big city. There's also the thought of expanded offerings because of Amazon's new HQ2? I don't know, just an idea. And another idea that's finally coming to fruition is more women in the boardroom. A Chicago Tribune report showed that the majority of the top 15 Chicago-based companies can boast an uptick in the number of women in the boardroom, like Ulta, Walgreens, Equity Residential, and McDonald's. The movement is definitely in the right direction, but things are grinding slowly. So keep on keeping on. Tune in tomorrow for all of your up-to-date business news on WGN Radio.
Our number of the week, and sadly this number is appropriate given what's happened in Noblesville, Indiana today. In a survey from earlier this year, 32% of Americans under 30 said they practiced what to do in the event of a mass shooting at their school. Not a single respondent to the age of 65 or older said they did so. So the number of the week, 32%.
Back to Steve Bertrand and the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
All right, Rod Rosa's in the studio. He's the director of the Cook County Land Bank, and he's got land coming out of his pockets.
Hey, Steve, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so this is the sort of thing where, well, on the one hand, it's a perfect opportunity if you live in the neighborhood and you're aware of it, but it might be a great opportunity, too, for people who don't necessarily live in the neighborhood and
absolutely
aren't aware of it.
Absolutely.
Tell me about what's going on right now with the land bank.
So what's going on is that there are a number of properties coming out of the foreclosure crisis. We had a number of properties that have been tax burdened. So taxes had been paid in a number of years.
So the people couldn't afford it anymore. They left it. And
correct,
that means Cook County's not collecting on the property taxes that they would be.
Correct. And more importantly, that property isn't being used. So in the neighborhoods, you have houses that are abandoned and vacant. Vacant lots that are now dirty and unkempt. All right, and it starts to also take a toll on the neighborhoods.
Sure.
And so part of it is, you know, being able to acquire these properties through the tax sale, and then being able to use a wide network of neighborhood groups, developers, investors, homeowners, to be able to find a new use for these properties.
So is it the county that takes possession of the property because of a failure to pay tax?
Yeah, so we go through a process called the scavenger sale, uh-huh, and there's an auction for the properties that we win in the bid in the auction. We then acquire them, be able to wipe out the back taxes, and then sell it at below market prices to all the different groups that want to redevelop.
And you kicked off this year in May, almost 3,200
vacant lots.
But that's not all, right?
That's not all, right? So we do this in waves. We went to the scavenger sale back in 2017, July of 2017. We picked up about 9,500 properties at that scavenger sale. The first release has been the 3,200 vacant lots.
Okay.
We also have a number of single-family homes, commercial and industrial properties that we'll do in subsequent waves.
And these are primarily in depressed areas, right? Or
these are focused. The concentration has been in the south and west side of Chicago, south suburbs and western suburbs. But really where it comes from is for properties in which the taxes have been paid for 3 years or more.
Okay. So if I am living next to one of these vacant lots, I can pick it up, make a side yard for
perfect
a song, right? What are you talking
about? Yes.
$1,500?
$1,500 to $5,000 is the range right now for a residential lot, a standard 25 by 125. Chicago lot.
So if I lived in the ward and I wanted to buy a vacant lot for about half of what it would normally cost, I could do that and build on it.
That's correct.
But you also want people to create park space and things like that.
Right. So what we want people to do is we want them to redevelop in accordance with their neighborhood plan. So in some cases, community gardens or a playground makes sense for the neighbors, a side lot. We've had some churches that are looking to do parking lots.
Right.
So a variety of uses. We've had some urban gardens that have come from it.
I don't live in Englewood. If I wanted to go into Englewood and buy up some property, I'd have to. It's not as easy as that.
Well, you're able to put your application, and we do require that you receive automatic support. We want to make sure that whomever is buying from us is responsible and respectful to the neighborhoods.
Right. And so, are you? I mean, on the one hand, I was going to say, are you worried about developers buying up land and? But maybe that's what you're after. I mean, well that would be a good thing.
It's a mix, right? Yeah. It's a mix. So we definitely want to provide an opportunity for neighborhood folks to be able to buy their own neighborhood. There's a buy the block movement that we have in many of the neighborhoods, and we want to give those groups the opportunity to do that. But it takes a mix. We do need some developers to be able to come in and be able to do larger scale developments and be able to take on some of the work as well.
Rod Rose is the executive director of the Cook County Land Bank. Where do people find you or find out more information about this?
It starts with our website. That's cookcountylandbank.org. CookCountyLandBank.org and follow the links for apply and buy property.
So you could do well for yourself financially, but you could also do well for some neighborhoods who could use some doing good.
That's the triple bottom line, doing well for yourself, doing well for your neighborhood, doing well for the city.
How are the numbers doing so far?
So far, so good. So we've started this program in 2015. So this is the latest release that we've done. But since 2015, we've received over 1,900 applications for the properties, which is incredible. As you can imagine, opportunities like this usually are reserved for the well-heeled, and there's a short list of people who get this sort of properties. We have opened this up, and we've seen a tremendous response from the county.
All right, keep us posted, Rod. Nice to talk to you.
Absolutely.